I never thought about the universe, it made me feel small. Never thought about the problems of this planet at all. Global warming, radioactive sites, imperialistic wrongs, and animal rights. No!
Hello, it's August 25th, 2015. This is episode 7, and I am Bill Quinn. This episode, I'm going to be replaying an interview I did back in June, but that I had to edit down to put into a shorter podcast. But now I'm going to play the entire interview. This is Reshma Patel with the Impact Network. Now, the Impact Network does a lot of amazing work with schools in rural Zambia. And they use a lot of technology, a lot of innovative ideas, and they are bringing a lot of change to a struggling school system. So in this episode is my complete interview where we really talk about some of the things that the Impact Network is doing to create change. Also some ways for you to get involved in what they do. And with that, here is my interview. So I'm here with Reshma Patel, who's the executive director with the Impact Network. Tell me a little bit about the education system in Zambia at the moment. What is kind of the situation on the ground? And then we'll talk a little bit about what your organization's doing to support the education.
So in Zambia, there's basically two types of schools that students can attend, mainly talking about primary school here. There's government schools, and these are built by the government and operated by the government. They tend to be accessible. There are some government schools in rural areas, but they're the type of schools you might find like off the main road. And then there's also community schools. And community schools really have grown in the last decade or so. What that means is often the school, the structure itself is built by an NGO or some funder that comes into a community. And often these tend to be in more rural areas. And builds a structure and then passes it on to the community to run. So the community is then tasked with raising them funds to pay a teacher or to find a volunteer teacher and get all the resources for the schools. So there's these two sort of types of schools in Zambia. And, you know, when we started the organization, we were really focused on doing what a lot of NGOs do, which is build these community schools and hand them over to the communities to run. But what we found was that without any resources, so without textbooks and ideas on what the curriculum should look like and management and funds and resources, to be honest, the quality of what was going to be schools was pretty poor. So what we wanted to do when we first started was build these schools and hand them over to the community. And then we sort of evolved to how we thought about it and decided to focus more on what was going on inside classroom walls rather than the construction themselves. And in general, the Zambian government is trying to figure out a solution for the education crisis really facing the country to try and improve the quality of community schools. What they're finding, though, is that the cost to convert all of these community schools into government schools is quite high. So what we aim to be is really a solution that's in between. We're high quality, but we operate at a pretty low cost.
And how many schools are you involved with or working with?
Yeah, we have 10 schools that are primarily based in the eastern province of Zambia in sort of one cluster that has there's a radius. They're all within about 25, 30 miles of one another. But they are in extremely rural areas. There's no real roads. Some of the roads aren't passable in the rainy season. Where we operate, the schools are pretty close together. They're, you know, for all intents and purposes, you can think of it as like a mini school district. So what we're able to do is share resources across those 10 schools. So we have two teacher supervisors that travel to each school every day of the week. So each of them has 5 schools under their belt. And they observe the teachers and provide formative feedback at each school every day. And then we have other management staff making sure they have the right supplies, making sure everything's working at the schools, providing any help to teachers that they can, working with the communities that we're working in to make sure there's a parent-teacher association at every school, meeting with the parent-teacher association to really help bridge the community and the school together.
So what kind of success have you seen and how do you measure that success?
Yeah, so the first, unlike New York City, the first standardized assessment in Zambia starts in grade 5. And by that time, to be honest, in terms of what's happening with students, a lot of students have either dropped out by that point or are attending but still don't know how to read and write, for example. Wow. So when they get to that first standardized assessment, it's students generally score pretty poorly. I think the last survey that was done across Zambia showed that 90% of students weren't meeting the desired standards in math and English. And so what we do is we have assessments that are done once every term. There's three terms in the Zambian school year. They're done at the end of the term, and they're created by mostly our teachers and teacher supervisors. There's a representative from each school and each grade that come together to craft the questions based on the curriculum. And then those are graded at the end of the term and given out to students and sent home to parents as a sort of report card on how their students did. So that's one way we do it. And that's internally, but externally, we also had an evaluation done by American University. And what American University did across first and second graders is measure our students on the early grade reading assessment and the early grade math assessment. So those are the EGRA and EGMA tests that are pretty widely known in the international ed world. So they measured our students on these two early assessments on reading and math. And then they also measured students in nearby community schools that weren't operated by us and nearby government schools. And what they found was that there's a number of benefits to our program outside of just the assessment. So parents really liked the programs that we provided. Teachers attended class more often in our schools than in other schools. Student attendance and student motivation was higher in our schools than other schools. And the progress, so the amount that students were able to learn over an 18-month period on the early grade reading and early grade math assessment was better than the government schools or the same as the government schools, depending on the subscale you looked at. And all of that is able to be done. We operate at a cost of about 70% less than the government schools. So what we were really trying to do is provide a low-cost solution to community schools and improving the quality. And what our evaluation showed was that we were able to do that quite successfully.
That's amazing. I'm sure there's a whole bunch of things, but what are you doing to be able to operate at 70% less or at such a lower cost and yet be so much more successful? What's maybe the disconnect or what's happening in other schools that you're able to do that they're missing it on?
So one of the things that we depend on pretty heavily is our e-learning platform. And that's through an organization called iSchool that operates in Zambia. And what iSchool did was basically take the Zambian curriculum, map it to standardized lesson plans for teachers as well as lessons for students, and create activity-based content for inside the classroom. So one of the things that we found in working in Zambia is a lot of the learning that goes on is really rote memorization. So for example, to teach students English, the teacher might say, "It is a chair," and then students repeat, "It is a chair." What iSchool's done is create a much more creative lesson. So it's heavily based on group work. About half the lessons use small student tablets. It's been translated into all the local languages in Zambia. So for very young students that are just learning how to read and write, they are not learning how to read and write in a foreign language. They're learning in their own language. So the iSchool tablet itself is a pretty big resource that we use, and it can be shared pretty heavily across classrooms. So instead of having a textbook and workbooks for students that have to be like one workbook per student, you can use these tablets that have similar exercises that students work through, but they can be shared across many students in the school. The second thing we do is hire teachers locally from the areas that we work. So we hire untrained teachers who've completed the 12th grade under the Zambian system. The primary reason we do this is, one, it creates jobs in these local, very rural areas that don't exist. So where we work, teachers and a few shops are pretty much the only sources of employment. Everyone else there is really a farmer, and even our teachers have some land that they farm. So we hire locally first to stimulate the economy a little, but second also because these teachers know our students. They've seen them, they've grown up with them, they know the parents. You know, it's much more informal of a relationship. If a student stops attending, for example, they can just talk to parents directly. You know, I've been traveling with our regional director before, Daniel Mwanza, and he'll stop kids like in the middle of the field and ask them why they're not in school. You know, people, there's a local level of oversight when teachers are hired locally that is really important. And then third, you know, for us, we provide a lot of tools to our teachers and a lot of training. So the iSchool tablets and technology is a resource for teachers who haven't taught before to really have lesson plans at their disposal, to learn, you know, what the best ways of delivery are, and then to take it another step further. So our best teachers can look at a standard lesson plan and really change it so that it's more effective in their classrooms for their students. A beginner teacher at least has some guideposts to start. And then the training that we offer is really quite intensive. So we have a training that's done at the end of every month and a bigger one that's done at the end of every term that involves all of our teachers. And those are led by our teacher supervisors and our operation manager. And then we have our teacher supervisors observing and giving feedback every single week. So on a Monday, they'll come see a teacher's class. They'll come back the next week to see if they're learning and progressing. So it's really not like a one-time professional development. It's really an ongoing thing that we try to improve our teachers. And some of our teachers have gone on to, you know, save money by working with us and gone on to professional training and teacher college and certification prep classes. So one of the things we're really proud of is hiring local untrained teachers and providing them with tools and training.
So are you hoping that your schools will be a model for the Zambian government? I mean, are you trying to promote what you're doing as something that that should be followed across the country?
One of the things we've accomplished this year is starting a partnership with the American Institute for Research, and they are really interested in scaling up what we do across, you know, 60 or 70 schools in the Eastern Province and working with the government on that scale up to see how this program would work in other settings. Trying to do right now is work with the government to the community schools that are there, work with the teachers that they've hired and the local staff that exist, provide them with the e-learning technology and support, and basically create more of these little districts that are running our program.
So if someone at home is listening to this and they want to get involved, what kind of things are you looking for as far as other people helping out or people getting involved, volunteering or donations or donation of materials? What kinds of things that can people at home do to help support what you're doing?
People can help out in a number of ways. So the first is that we have about 50 staff members in Zambia and about 2 in New York. Really rely pretty heavily on the help of volunteers and interns to run events, to help with fundraising, sort of everything in between in New York City. So we always year-round are hiring interns and volunteers in our New York office. Provide internship opportunities in Zambia. So we have usually 1 to 2 interns living in the village and helping our staff in Zambia. And there's always positions posted for that as well. And then we usually have 2 sort of fundraising events a year. And the main one we have is called Fest for Impact. And that happens every fall. And it's sort of a gala event where we have chefs from around the city each donate a course. And so it's sort of a culinary gourmet menu. We have a silent and live auction. But that event, you know, is a big coordination effort from us. So we are always looking for volunteers and interns to help get auction items, help coordinate the logistics of the event, help sell tickets. So we usually have 2 sort of events a year, and we're always happy to have people help out for those. We also have something called Impact Advocates, where people fundraise for the organization in different creative ways. So we had a 9-year-old donate their birthday. We've had people sort of throw a barbecue in their home, and it only costs us $3 a month to provide a quality education to one of our students in Zambia. So it's an amount that's really easy for sort of anyone to be able to help with. It's a cup of coffee. So, you know, people like a 9-year-old can raise money just as well as, you know, 25-year-old in college or something. So we really have had a sort of a range of people that have helped under our Impact Advocates program. And so, yeah, I mean, I encourage anyone to check out our job postings on Idealist or contact us directly if they're looking to be involved in any fundraising aspect.
I want to let you go, but I want to ask you one more question. What is something that you've learned that maybe you could pass on to people in similar situations or working with international nonprofits? And what have you learned that you could maybe pass on to someone else doing something similar?
Sure. I guess my one piece of advice would be to be persistent and resilient. The work is pretty tough, and any little task can take so much longer than you anticipate. So for example, one of my trips last year, I was visiting the schools with our regional director, and there was these desks that looked broken, and I was sort of like, you know, what are these desks doing here? And he was like, oh, you know, we need to get them fixed, but you have to get the bolts to do that. And they were out of bolts in Catete, which is the nearest town. And so then we went to Chapada to get the bolts, and they were sold out there too. And it turns out that you had to go like one country over to Malawi to get these particular bolts to fix these desks. So even like the simplest task that you think should take, you know, like a couple hours or a half a day's work can take a long time. And I think being patient really goes a long way, but also being able to handle those types of delays with a little bit of grace and humor is the one thing that can keep someone sane in the work. So that's my one piece of advice.
All right. Well, thank you very much for taking some time and speaking with me today. And, best of luck to you and everyone you're working with.
Thanks so much, Bill. I really appreciate it.
And that's it. My thanks again to Rashma and the Impact Network for taking some time to talk to me. And with that, I hope to see you next week. Okay, take care.